Limon used to say, you can put an arrow in the eyes of the Satan. Yom Ahad, one day, says the Gemara, the Satan dressed up like an ani, like a poor man. This day happened to be Erev Yom Kippur. Atah kara baba, this Satan that's dressed like a poor man came and knocked on Plimo's door. Plimo opened up the door, Erev Yom Kippur, he sees a poor man. And he gives him a piece of bread. The poor man says, Yom HaKeina, on a day like today, Kuli on the Gabbai, everyone's inside, you're leaving me outside? So Plimo says, oh, no, of course. Father, come inside. He brings him inside, and he puts him to sit on the kitchen table. And this poor man, this Ani, that's really the Satan, says, Yom HaKeina, on a day like today, Erev Yom Kippur, Kuli Amma, the God was sitting on the dining room table. Why you live loud in here, son? Everyone's sitting on the dining room table, Erev Yom Kippur. Everyone's sitting on the dining room table. Everyone's sitting on the dining room table, and you're leaving me in the kitchen? Like this and that? He says, okay, so come sit on the dining room table. So he comes to sit on the dining table with one man. Says the Gemara, all of a sudden the poor man's body starts to fill with boils and pus, and the poor man starts to scratch, and he's a mess. There's oil, there's boils, there's pus coming out of him, and Plimo says, sit up. The poor man says, I need help, give me a cup. Plimo gives him a beautiful silver cup, and this poor man starts spitting into the cup, spitting up into the cup. Right now they're looking at me and he's saying, you're not even sure if I'm understanding my English. Like, is this really the story? What's he saying? Just stay with me. It gets worse. So Plimo yells at him. Next thing you know, the poor man falls over and he dies. Word goes out in the street that Plimo killed someone. Plimo katadabra. Plimo katadabra. Plimo killed someone. Plimo killed someone. Plimo doesn't understand what's happening. 10 minutes ago, there was this Erev Yom Kippur, poor man was at his door. He gave him bread. Then he's in his house. Then he's at his dining room table. Then he has all these boils and pus. Now he looks disgusting. He hands him a silver cup. The man spits up into the cup. Now see him, he's dead. And I killed him. And Plimo's reputation is ruined. Plimo gets up. Off his days, out of his room, out of the house, out of the block. He leaves the town, he runs into the forest. He's in the forest by himself. And all of a sudden, he sees right next to him is the poor man, is the Ani. He says, I don't understand, I thought you were dead. He says, no, I'm not dead, I'm really the Satan. So I don't die. He says, if you're really the Satan, then why do you drive me crazy? He says, because what you said, says the Satan to Plimo, what you said, he said, what I said? You said you could put an arrow in the eyes of the Satan. He says, what should I have said? You should have said, Rahmana Hashem, please help me fight the Satan. End of the story. You can look it up. I pretty much am telling you word for word. Maaseh Kiddushin at the end. What's this story talking about? Since when the Satan dressed up like a poor man, what's he doing knocking on the door? Why did Erev Yom Kippur? What's happening? He's in the house, he's at the table. What are we talking about? The Maharsha explains this story in a way that not only was it relevant then, this story might be one of the most relevant Gemara stories for today that you've ever heard. Says the Maharsha, you know the Satan is the Yetzer Hara. Says, here's how the Yetzer Hara works. Did you ever, is there such a thing as alcohol? Are there any alcoholics in prison? Yes, there's such a thing. How does a person become an alcoholic? How does a person become an alcoholic? I'll tell you how a person becomes an alcoholic. One day, Purim, he's 60 16 years old, and his friends tell him, come on, have a drink. He says, okay, have another one, okay. He doesn't drink after that. Next Purim, Purim's on a Tuesday, from Parashat Zachor, where his friends are giving him drinks. The next summer, I don't even know when the summer is here. Is the summer now? Is the summer? When do you have the summer? I have the summer in the winter with you. I'm the summer. It's the summer right now. So our summer is in July. So whenever you call it summer, he goes with a few friends, they have a drink. He says, okay, I had a drink a few times. Then he goes to learn in Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael dies in an apartment. And the boys on Friday night, they get some drinks. Every Friday night. Now he comes back, he's ready to date and get married. He's dating a girl, he's about to get engaged, she drops him. Now he doesn't know what to do, he has a drink. Eventually he dates a girl and gets married. And next thing you know, he has struggles with Parnassah and struggles in his marriage. And the only thing that makes him feel good is a drink. And now he starts to have a drink 3-4 nights a week, he's getting drunk. Next thing you know, he's alcoholic. How does the Yetzer Hara work? He always starts slow and innocent. The same thing with Lo Aleinu, someone has a gambling addiction or a drug addiction. Slow and innocent. Just like the Satan in Klimo's story. First he comes and knocks on the door. Dressed like a poor man. Poor man coming for a piece of bread. That's very innocent. Poor man, no problem. Next thing you know, he's in your house. Next thing you know, this Yetzer Hara is at your table, means he's in your life. And next thing you know, he's making you do disgusting things. You ever see a person with alcohol, all of a sudden he's disgusting, he's vomiting? What was that?
iPhone, you always get it. car service or a taxi service, he'd have to wait 20 minutes, the taxi would come, and then he has to pay. Now it's so much easier. He's in school, he wants to leave, he wants to go somewhere, he walks outside, click. 3 minutes later, the car is there. And he goes in the right, and it's free. I mean, maybe daddy pays later, but it's free. And then also, people are busy, people are learning to allow, you don't have time to go to stores. So it's so wonderful. There's an app that you don't have to go to any stores. It's a great app. You have the app. You know what the app it doesn't make? You click on the app, and boxes just come to your house with smiles on them. So happy to be there. Maybe you're crying, your wife is happy, your kids are happy. It's such a wonderful thing. And then, you know, once I have it, I might as well get some news. And once I have some news, I might as well get some sports. And once I get some sports, I might as well get some shows. And once I get some shows, I might as well get a little social media. And once I get a little social media, I might as well watch some extra movies. And once I watch extra movies. And next thing you know, it owns you. The poor man knocked on the door and said, I have an electronic CD in your pocket. And you said, wow, please, Father, I'm excited. And then he was in your house. Then he was in your life at your table. Next thing you know, you're so attached to it, and you're doing this stuff, and you're watching your kids, and watching your video, you don't want it to watch. Just like the poor man with the boils, and he's scratching and busting something. You tell your kid, don't watch that. And he says, I don't want it. I'm so attached. My old friends, everyone's doing, what should I do? And he wants help. But he's so attached, he can't let go. Next thing you know, and then there's another identity article, biggest homes in South America. And you go, ooh, I haven't seen any of them are Syrian in Brazil. And you click. And next thing you know, it's 12. Because this device, you don't, this device that's in your pocket, and it starts off so much more innocent than it actually is. I share with you all this from a Gemara. Let me not share with you a Gemara. Let me instead tell it to you from Silicon Valley themselves. You know what Silicon Valley is? Silicon Valley is where all of this stuff is created and invented. And there's something, this is from the heads of these companies. This is from the head of YouTube, the head of Instagram, the head of Facebook, you heard these companies, the head of Google. And here's what they said, I'm explaining to you how it works. In order to explain to how it works, I need someone that I could ask some questions to. Can I ask you some questions? Yes? Do you have to answer? Yes? Okay, good. I'm explaining to you how this works and how it works. How much does it cost to buy a pair of shoes in Brazil? Tell me in American dollars, I don't know what your coin is. $100, okay, good. How much does it cost to buy a suit? What? $500, okay, good. How much does it cost to buy a sweater? What? $150. How much does it cost to buy a car? Depends on the car. What? $30. Okay. How much is it cost to buy a home? $1 million? What? $250? You buy an apartment here for $250,000? I'm moving.
When I'm the customer, they care about me. a shoe store, they want me to be happy. They want me to like their shoes. They want me to be happy in their shoes. They want me to be happy in their suit, happy in their sweater. They want me to be happy in their car. But when I'm their product, they don't care about me. They will do everything possible to get more product. If they have to make me happy, if they have to make me sad, if they have to make me worried, if they have to make me mad, if they have to make me anxious, if they have to make me depressed, if they have to make me nervous, if they have to make me worried, whatever it takes, any lights that can flicker, any noise that can be made, whatever it takes to get more of me, they will do, because I am a pair of shoes to them. They just want to take me and sell me. In fact, if you're not sure, I'll give you one example of one of these examples. You notice, if you ever send a WhatsApp message, as the other person is responding, there are dots coming on the screen, dots. Why do they do dots? Why do they do this? Why don't they? If you respond, he responds. The answer is they know that if the dots are coming, you're going to keep looking. And you're thinking, what's he going to say? Is he angry about what I said? Is he happy? Is he angry? Is he going to stop me, my friend, forever? Does he love me? What's he going to say? And he's sitting and staring at the screen, and they got a few more seconds, a few more minutes of your brain. If you want to know how far this goes, and I know we're talking about the technology piece a lot, but I think it's very real and relevant. I was asked to focus on it a little. If you want to know how far this goes, I used to be very involved in a school back in New York, modern-ish school, boys and girls, Maggie David. Anybody ever heard of Maggie David? Did she live in New York? And I walked into a girls' class one day, ninth grade girls' class, and they're not allowed to have their phones on them. They said they put their phones on the windowsill. I said, girls, how much time do you think you spend on the phone every day? So they said, I don't know. I don't know, maybe 2 hours. I said, I bet you it's more. They're like, how much more could it be? We can't have our phone in class. We go to sleep at night. We eat. It can't be so much more than 2 hours. I said, I bet you it's more than 2 hours. They said, Rabbi, you think it's 3 hours a day? I said, I don't know. I'm telling you, I think it's more than 2 hours. They say, nah, I'm kidding. I said, you know, let's stop negotiating. Here's the story. Girls, go to the windowsill and get your phone. There's something on the phone. There's a feature on the phone. It's called average daily screen time. Every one of you bring your phone to your desk. Take out a piece of paper, write your name on the top of the paper, and write down your average daily screen time. I just want you to see it. You don't have to give it to me. Every girl got their phone. Every girl wrote down their name. And then their average daily screen time. And they shall make Shabbat, so it's Shabbat at zero, and it's average day. They all handed the papers to me. I still have it in my house. First girl was average screen time 6.5 hours. Next girl, average daily screen time 7. Next one was 9. 8.25 hours was the next one. Next one was 11. One girl was on Sunday alone, 14 hours. There's one girl who in a week spends 33 hours a week just on TikTok. I said, girls, I didn't make this up. But they're like, how could it be? We don't use it in class, we sleep, we eat, how could it be? I said, okay, how could it be? You do use it in class, and you don't sleep at home. You take the phone to your bed at 11 o'clock, you don't actually fall asleep. Till 1:30, and you wake up again to check the message. In the morning when you wake up, before you tonight you're dying, before you brush your teeth, you check your phone. And you're on it, you don't eat. You don't go to any, everywhere you are, the phone is in front of you. Ladies and gentlemen, 20 years ago, when this stuff started, all of us had no clue. But now we know what it is and we know what it does. And now if we're going to be healthy, wonderful parents,
instructions. But instead, what I'm going to do is tell you what's going on around the world. Because I've had the opportunity to speak about this topic in New York and in New Jersey, in LA, in Mexico, in Detroit, Chicago, Panama, many places, maybe almost every Jewish city, Montreal, Toronto. And I'm going to tell you what's out there in the Jewish world. And you will decide what you want to do. I'm going to give you two, maybe even three levels. Let me first start with the basic level. Almost every Jew at this point that cares, that's really Shomer Torah and Sfot, has some type of filter. That's what's going on. 10 years ago, it wasn't that way. But now, as people are growing, and as people are learning, and as people are realizing that this is basically the Satan standing at my door, many, many people are starting to get filters, even basic filters, just something that protects from the worst. Because I want to tell you something else that I have told many thousands and tens of thousands of people at this point. And I'll say it here. If you have a son that is single, a teenager that's single, and he has a phone that he's able to bring to his room that is not filtered. Again, you have a teenage son that has an unfiltered phone that he could bring to his room alone, guaranteed he's seeing the worst things. Maybe not every night, maybe it's just once a month, but guaranteed he's seeing the worst things. And I've said this to tens of thousands of boys, and never once has a boy come forward and said, Rabbi, how can you say that? It's not true about me. It's just a reality. Guaranteed. If he's married, not guaranteed. He's a little kid, not guaranteed. If he's a teenage boy and he's single and he can bring the phone that's unfiltered, even if he's a yeshiva boy, even if he's learning Kola, I don't care. The Yetzer Hara is just too tough. So that's why many, many, if not most, or vast majority of people that are Shomer Torah and Mitzvot, that they learn every day and care about Torah in a real way, are getting some type of filter on their phone. To at least avoid the bottom of the world. That's number one. And again, I'm not telling you what to do. And I'm not telling you you're terrible if you don't. I'm just telling you what's happening in Jewish religious cities around the world, and you can choose. Here's level two. Level two is this. And again, before I get to level two, I want to clarify this. What's good about the filters today is that they have every level filter. That means if you're the kind of person who says, but I love watching sports, I don't want anything getting in the way of my sports, you can have a filter that still lets you watch every single soccer match, every one. You can have a filter, you can see all the news. 10 years ago, filters were like, you can't function, your phone pretty much doesn't work once you have a filter. That's not the case today. There's a lot of different levels of filters. Some people have filters that can't see anything, but there's plenty of people that have filters that are Shomer Torah Mitzvot, they have filters, and it's a better level than just to make sure that not their son, their daughter, or even themselves on a bad night doesn't see the worst things in the world. That's level one. Level two is this. Level two is what's happening, and it's cute to talk about technology as if it's a kid problem, your son's problem, your daughter's problem. The reality is it's not. It's our problem. I want to tell you why. The reason is because Steve Jobs was a genius. You know what Steve Jobs was? You know what Steve Jobs was? Okay, you know what Steve Jobs was? Steve Jobs is the man who created the iPhone. What was the genius, only the head of Apple for many years? Why? What was the genius of Steve Jobs? And let me explain it to you, and you'll understand why this is so ridiculous. Back in the day, there used to be things that people did that was important. And then the things that people did, there was entertainment. People would have a computer for work, and then they'd have a television, let's say, for entertainment. So they had this and this. So when they were working, they did work, and they went in front of the computer. And then if they wanted an hour of entertainment, they would go in front of the TV. That's what he was thinking. The genius of Steve Jobs is he did two things. A, he put the entertainment and the work in the same device. And then B, he put that device in your pocket. So now here's what happens to us. You can be a wonderful father. When you come home and you want to talk to your kids and your phone buzzes, so you pick up your phone, you look at your phone, because it's an important email. You're waiting for an email from China, you got an important email. And then you grab the email, and next thing you know, you see a little bit of sports. And then you see a little bit of sports, and you're waiting for the other person to respond to the email. And before you know it, it has you for 10 minutes. But you only want to look for 30 seconds. The answer is genius. Because he put the work and the entertainment in the same device. He keeps getting you. So when you're in your work, you keep looking at it for work. When you're being entertained, you look at it entertainment. And while you get up entertainment, work pops up. And while you get at work, entertainment pops up. And it's right there on your body. So most people today, literally when they go to sleep, their phone is in arm's length. They can touch their phone as they're sleeping. Because they need it right there. He made it part of everything. So here's the level two. Level two is that people have the courage, people that want to have a beautiful home, a focused home, people that want to have real close relationship with their children, people that want to be able to make eye contact with their spouse, with their husband, or with their wife, and really communicate properly. Delete, delete, delete. It's a higher level than just the filter. Delete. Look at your phone and say, one second, do I really need, do I need four apps that tell me the news? Or is one good enough? Am I getting pulled into the sports and I'm watching, it's one thing I'm watching some goal that someone in Brazil, but now I'm watching from England too. I'm getting pulled in. Delete. Because I want to tell you something. Your children, whatever stage they're in, they're not in for very long. If they're in little preschool, doesn't last so long. If they're in elementary school, doesn't last so long. And these moments are incredibly powerful and beautiful moments. Do you want to look back in 10 years from now and say, because I had to watch some guy from Man United hit a goal, kick a goal, I didn't talk to my kid? Because I felt like I had to respond to every WhatsApp chat, I didn't even look at my wife. And all of a sudden that stage of my life is gone. And the kids out of the house. And where to go at the time? It went to me looking at the dumb things on the phone. If you want to know how much people can get wrapped up in the phone, I'll give you an example. I live in New York. At one time, a couple of years ago, I went to Chicago. So back then, I didn't ask where you put me on the plane. You take me to Chicago to sleep, just get me a ticket. I didn't care. I started to care. But then I didn't care. So when you don't care, they give you the last seat in the back of the plane. I was like in row 33, middle seat. And I'm sitting on the plane, and right before they close the door, a man comes and sits next to me. Maybe he's in his 40s or 50s. Big man pretty much took up his seat and half of mine. And I can't even sit straight. And the man, we did flights about 2 hours from JFK to O'Hare. The entire 2 hours, this man was crushing candy. You know what crushing candy is? It's a game called Candy Crush. And the whole 2 hours, he's doing this and this and this. And the whole time I was just burning to tell him, what? You're an adult. You're crushing candy. So this Elu, I went to from New York to Indianapolis. And now I care about where I sit, so I pretty much sit with the pilot. So I'm sitting in the front of the plane, and a friend
full man comes on. See, seat out, kippa on, sits down in the seat next to me. And he crushed candy the whole flight. And he goes up to me, I want to tell you about that. Are you his brother? A few weeks after that, I went to Panama with another rabbi. And I mentioned this in Panama. 2 days later, that rabbi was flying to England. He sent me a message. He says, Rabbi, I'm flying to England on the plane, and the person sitting next to me is crushing candy. Adults, how did Steve Jobs do this? How did he get grown men and women in their 40s and 50s, employed people, how did he get us to sit and play Candy Crush? It's not even fun. How? Because he knows the game. He knows how to make you a product. He knows how to first get the poor man out the door, then in your house, then at your table, then makes you do funny things. And then you're like, I can't believe how attached I am. Come on, I gotta stop. Please help me. And so he says, okay, we're gonna help you. Put your phone in the living room when you go to sleep. And you're like, oh wow, that's great advice. So for 2 nights, you charge your phone in the living room when you go to sleep. By night number 3, you're waiting for a text message from someone. You can't leave it in the living room. It's right back at your bed within arm's length. I don't know if it's true about adults, but I can tell you about kids. If your kids have a smartphone, 90% of kids with a smartphone, they go to sleep with their phone in their hand. They don't need a pillow. They just need a phone. So if you want to have a healthy environment in your home, it's delete. Now, at one time, 4.5 years ago, I don't know whose device I had. I had a device, I don't have it anymore. I had a device, and it was very filtered. But the American election was happening. You guys know anything about the elections in America? You pay attention to this or not? Yeah. You care. So, the election was happening. This was when Trump was going against Biden about 5 years ago. So I said, you know what? I told someone, a secretary that was in, I said, do me a favor, put a news app on my phone, on this device, just for tonight, election night. Election night is on a Tuesday, early November, let's say November 5th. Just put it on my phone for tonight. I'll just get it for election night. And once they announce a winner, I'm going to delete it from the phone. So that night I had it on my phone. The only problem was, there was no winner. Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. I said to myself, 1 second, they're doing it to me too. Now all of a sudden, CNN, ABC, I'm watching these different things, Fox News, and I don't think they can announce a winner for another 2 weeks. You have to know the game they play. The game they play is they just want to get into your life any way possible. If they have to bring COVID to get into your life, whatever they have to do, they just want to get into your life. And once they're in your life, they expand and expand and expand and expand until they own your brain. So level number 2 is delete. I hope every person in this room can at least consider the concept of a bare level filter. I hope everyone in this room can at least consider the concept of level number 2 of some type of deleting. You know, Gemara writes that wherever Am Yisrael was, Yeshivahimahem, when they were in Israel, Abraham had Yeshiva, Yisrael, Yaakov, right? And Goshen had Yeshiva, and Sinai had Yeshiva, and Nebad had Yeshiva. The course of Pasuk. I have a question. Why does he use the word Yeshiva? Why doesn't it just say Talmud Torah Mahem? Have Talmud Torah by Yeshiva. The answer is the yeshiva is more than just Talmud Torah. Yeshiva is a very powerful concept. Yeshiva means Yeshuv Hadar. Settled. Focused. If we're able to delete enough, we can have that kind of Yeshuv Hadar. To sit down with our kid and laugh with them. Cry with them. Talk to them. And listen to them. And hear them. That My son, it's a long story, but about 3 months ago, my son, 25-year-old son, running away with a yeshiva, married with two kids, had a stroke. And it's a long story, he's recovering, he's at the Shemot, he was back to his full self. We love his name, it's Nachem, and maybe I'm going to pray for him. He's getting there, he's not there yet. So now, at one point, I took him to a mountain in Manhattan. And my son pulls out a flip phone. And the doctor says, what is this, Susie? What's the tattoo with flip phones? He says, what's the reason? So my son starts to answer. Now the time I said, Samai, you know what? Can I take this? I told about this all over the world. Let me try to answer. He says, look at that, you answer. I said, doctor, here's pretty much the reason. You know how, like, the phones are bringing every distraction possible? You know how the phones are creating an unbelievable amount of anxiety and frustration? I said, you know how the phones have every temptation out there? He says, yeah. And he says, that's why he has a flip phone. And the doctor says, I don't understand. But that's not only a Jewish reason. That applies to everybody. He didn't tell me you're crazy. He didn't tell me you're ancient. He didn't tell me you're outdated. He said, why is it only for Jews? I said, you're right. I said, well, we're the ones who are willing to be disciplined, to restrict ourselves, to have the lives we hope we would when we were young. Which brings me to the third level. And the third level is this. And again, this third level I want to acknowledge. Most people in this room may not want to even hear this third level. But I'll just say to tell you what's out there in the world. The third level is to be fully, completely filled. That means you just get the bare necessities and it's completely, totally filled. Some people even have a flip phone, so it's completely, totally filled. You can't see pictures, you can't see images, you can't see videos. Completely, totally filled. And again, I'm not telling you that most people can do this. But I'm telling you that there are some people who realize that the only way to really keep myself, my head, where I need it to be, I need to even go to that third level. Because I want to tell you something. I could give you a lot of different statistics, but I'll give you one. And I hope this will make the point clearly. There's a newspaper in America called USA Today. I doubt you ever heard of it, so you've heard of it. Okay, USA Today. They do studies. In 2023, USA Today asked high school age girls, young adult girls, what percentage of you have anxiety and depression at times to the point that at times you cannot function? Again, how many of you have anxiety and depression that at times you cannot function? Here's the numbers that came back in the United States of America. I have no idea what's happening in South America. But here's what came back. Three girls out of every five girls. That means if you had a room of 100 girls, 60 of them at times have anxiety and depression that they can't function. 15 years ago, this wasn't the case. 15 years ago, you hadn't even heard of the word mental health. And now everyone says, I have anxiety, I have anxiety, depression, I have ADD. When did that happen? That happened when we put a device in our pocket and let the device do whatever it wants to our brains and make ourselves and our kids into product to just sell. In that place in Silicon Valley where all this is invented, I want you to be clear. They don't spend a lot of time and energy on the technology. The technology part of them is easy. They spend most of their time and energy and money on the psychology. And they sit in meetings and they say, this is how we're going to get their brain more. If you make the light flicker this fast, they'll look anymore. If you make a notification, if you make likes, if you make comments, they'll look anymore. And they'll look anymore. They don't spend hundreds or thousands or millions or billions. They spend trillions of dollars of this collectively just to figure out how to take your kid's brain. So I have to conclude. And I want to conclude with this. I know that what I said tonight is hard. It's going to be hard if anyone in this room decides to
seeing me sitting on the couch playing a video game, and I'm 40 years old. Or even if you're considering level C and you really want to fully filter completely, you're going to say, one second, but it's hard. You're going to say, one second, out there on the streets, the whole world has unfiltered device. Why do I have to filter mine? The whole world has it. I want to respond to that thought. And with this, we will conclude. Tell you a little story. Once, there was an eagle. And the eagle lay an egg on the top of a mountain. And one day the eagle flew away, and the egg came rolling down the mountain, all the way down the mountain, into a chicken coop. Now the egg is in a chicken coop, and there's a lot of little chicken eggs in this little chicken coop. And this eagle egg. One day the egg started to hatch, and out came a chick, and then another chick, and another chick, and another chick. And then this baby eagle came out. And the baby eagle looks at the other chicks and says, "What am I?" He says, "You're a chicken." She's like, "I'm a chicken? What do you mean, but I'm a different color?" "You're a chicken. But what do I have these for? What is this?" "That's nothing. Ignore it. You're a chicken." "You sure? I don't look the same. My feet said." "You're a chicken." So she says, "Okay, I'm a chicken. I guess I'll do what chickens do." So she starts bopping around in the chicken coop, and she eats a little bit of kernels of wheat and little things. 3 weeks later, the mother eagle comes gliding down to the chicken coop, and she tells the baby eagle, she tells the daughter, "Get on my back." "Baby eagle says, what?" She says, "Get on my back." She says, "Where are we going?" She says, "Just get on my back." And the mother eagle starts soaring in the sky. And the baby eagle's holding on. She said, "Where are we going?" She says, "Just hold on." And the baby eagle's holding on and holding on. And finally, they get to the top of the mountain. And the mother lets the baby eagle roll off her back. And the baby now is standing on top of the mountain. And the mother's about to fly away. And the baby says, "I don't understand. What do I do now?" The mother says, "You do what eagles do. You spread your wings and you fly." Ladies and gentlemen, we are a nation of eagles in a world of chickens. And society is doing everything they can to convince us that we are just like them. That we have to do what they do and buy what they buy and eat what they eat and see what they see and follow what they follow and be addicted just like they're addicted. Tonight, I'm asking you to have the courage to say, "I'm sorry. I was born with wings. I'm a Torah Jew. I'm an eagle. I do it different than you. And yes, I know it's hard. And yes, I know it's difficult. But if we're looking to have the homes we dream of in Brazil, if this community is going to be what you want it to be in 10 and 20 years from now, no, you're not going to be able to say, 'Oh, I didn't know what this does.' I just told you what it does. It's the poor man." And you know what that poor man, the Satan, has said to Klimon? He said, "The thing you did wrong is you said you could put an arrow in the eyes of the Satan." Klimon says, "What's wrong with that?" He says, "You mean when you say that, you're saying like, 'I don't have to worry about the Yetzirah, I got this.'" Says the Satan, "Don't ever say you got this. I am so much stronger than you." Instead, you should say, "Please, Hashem, help me with this." If anyone in this room is honest enough to admit that we are weak to that poor man who comes knocking on our door, and that poor man is capable of literally selling our brains, our daughter's brains, and our son's brains as product. They know they're so much more skilled than we are in how to own our time, that every time we try, we fall right back because they know us better than we know us. Then I hope we have the courage to take either step one, or step two, or step three. In essence, to bring Yeshua Hadat back to the Jewish nation. All I'm asking you to do is that when the poor man comes to your door, stand, slam the door in his face, and say, "I'm sorry, this is a house of eagles. In this house, we spread our wings and we fly." Thank you.